Welcome to our podcast in preparation for our third presentation within the series The Science of Practicing Medicine. This time we have Dr. David Miranda from Cardiology in CentraCare, who's going to be speaking to us about updates in CHF. So we are very thankful to him for his time and expertise. And I just learned that Dr. Miranda comes from perhaps the most biodiverse and respectful of nature country in the world, Costa Rica. So with that, Dr. Miranda, welcome and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So right off the bat, the first question that I had was, within CHF, what will you be speaking to us in the sense of what you think are the newest updates in care diagnosis and management of CHF?
Well, I think that heart failure has been a very dynamic field in the sense that there have been a lot of recent breakthroughs, especially in the medication arena. Just to give an example, SGLT2 inhibitors have been very prominent because they started as a diabetic medication, and now they become a very important medication in the heart failure arena. I think what I'm going to talk mostly is about the updates on medical therapy, specifically heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, that is half, 50% of the heart failure people that we see will benefit of what we call quadruple therapy. And I think that it is important that all practitioners across the spectrum understand the reasoning why we try to do quadruple heart failure medical therapy. Also, the importance of achieving high doses or the higher tolerated doses on this therapy. I think it's important for people to know across CentraCare what we're doing in the heart failure service. We do have a dedicated heart failure service where we see 1,500 to 2,000 patients a year just in the clinic. There is around 500 to 800 hospitalizations for heart failure in a year that we not only see them in the hospital, but we do follow them in a longitudinal way in the clinic. And we have a team of 5 heart failure doctors, 6 nurse practitioners, and 10 heart failure nurses, along with 1 pharmacist and 2 LPNs that help us in managing all these patients. And we do have services with telehealth that we see Wilmer, we see Melrose, we see Sock Center. And us, the heart failure doctors, we do go to this outreach center. So I think it's important for people to know the extent of what we do, the outreach, medical therapy. I think it's important for people to know when to refer a patient to the heart failure service, when it's important to involve not only general heart failure as a cardiologist, but also that we offer services of advanced heart failure that are only 10% of the population with heart failure with reduced EF, but it's an important part of central Minnesota that includes LVAD, that are left ventricular assist devices, and heart transplantation that we do in conjunction with the University of Minnesota, where we refer those patients and then they come back and we follow them so they don't have to go for every single appointment to the cities. And the other thing is, I think, touch a little bit on the technologies and the research that we're doing in the heart failure space. We do have pulmonary sensors that are implantable sensors that we put in the pulmonary artery. And with that, we can do remote monitoring. So people that live 80, 100 miles away, we implant sensors that we can monitor if they have congestion or not. And that's part of what I'm talking on the importance of identifying congestion, especially in some patients that are obese and they have COPD or some other lung pathology or comorbidities, where we don't know if it is a heart failure exacerbation versus a pulmonary problem. I think where the pulmonary sensors work. And these people that, you know, like elderly population that live far away, we can monitor them every day remotely from the hospital. And then lastly, this is mostly for people that work in the hospital setting. In the last 20 years, the management of congestion has been very subjective. People have used diuretics very subjectively. And recently, here in CentraCare, in the heart failure service specifically, we've been using something that is urinary sodium to manage and make diuresis more objective. And this is mostly for, you know, people that work in the hospital setting, hospitalists, in how the urinary sodium along with the referral to the heart failure service in Epic, and how that works.
That is wonderful. I wanted to ask you about the referral and general management process, but before a specific question, before I forget, you mentioned LVAD and cardiac transplant. Do you have a service for destination and bridge LVAD patients for out and inpatient? And how do you work in conjunction with the University of Minnesota for terminal LVADs or and cardiac transplant patients?
So for the advanced heart failure population, that, as I said, is 10% of all the reduced ejection fraction heart failure people, what we do is that either one of the five heart failure physicians see them here. So either primary care or even within our own group, the cardiologists will refer to us. And we talk to the patients, we discuss risk and benefits, we present them actual therapies, and we review the inclusion and exclusion that we know that the university has. And based on that, we discuss with the patient, we do right heart catheterization, cardiopulmonary stress test to make objective that they are really in terminal advanced heart failure or stage four, stage D heart failure. And every Friday morning, we do get on a call with the University of Minnesota where we discuss and present these patients. After that, we do have a process already in place that is very slick where we refer them and they actually either get admitted for expedited evaluation at the university or we send them for an outpatient visit in Maple Grove.
Okay. The other question I had, this is perhaps a more general. Do you see two aspects? Number one, that in the primary care force, there's not much awareness of therapy and people still sit on the ARBs and ACE inhibitors and beta blockers and diuretics without much awareness of the newer therapies. And number two, which is perhaps linked to that question, do you see often that patients are referred to you late? And do you think you're going to touch base on that during the lecture if such is the case?
I think yes. Sometimes I feel that those patients get referred late and that is a disservice for the patient because, I mean, I don't want to get into specifics, but the possibility of a transplant or an LVAD might be already gone when that happens. I think that creating awareness among the primary care providers to refer earlier to the heart failure service will be really beneficial.
In that sense, I wanted to make the audience aware and you aware of, you know, with the relatively recent joining of ACMC carries into CentraCare, there's a big chunk of providers that are getting used to CentraCare, and they may well not be aware whatsoever that within cardiology, there's a dedicated group that does CHF. And I think it's very interesting that you'll touch base in the newer therapeutic approaches and diagnostic and monitoring approaches, because, you know, as you can imagine, trying to handle everything within primary care is literally impossible at times. So is there any aspect like a spin-off from CHF that you work with cardiothoracic surgeons or any particular management of, I don't know, valvular disease? Do you get any involvement with that, or those are completely separated groups on that, or there's a particular kind of joint venture in which you would say you work together with other groups within cardiology and or cardiothoracic surgery?
Very good point, because I think heart failure is a continuum. For example, mitral valve disease is a disease that is very intertwined with heart failure. So people that have secondary mitral irritation or functional mitral irritation where there's no primary disease in the valve, they do have heart failure symptoms. So we do work with them very closely to optimize medical therapy, diurese these patients as much as we can, do a right heart catheter, for example. And then after all that optimization of medical therapy is done, then we refer them for either a mitral clip, that is a structural heart, or a mitral valve replacement, that is cardiac surgery. That is in the preventive space arena. Also, we do work together with cardiothoracic surgery because sometimes we have people that have really low ejection fraction that are in decompensated heart failure and they need optimization prior to a surgery. So we do have balloon pump optimization in PAL devices, that is in it's an axial pump that goes inside the heart to unload the heart. And we do work very closely in the CICU within heart failure, but that is more of a critical care cardiology / heart failure part. But all this is a continuum where we do have valvular heart disease and they could end up in advanced heart failure, and that's where we see them for transplant. Or people that cannot manage congestion appropriately, and that's where the pulmonary sensors to manage these patients remotely gets into place. Like, for example, we have several stories where we get a referral from a primary care doctor that it's a patient that is obese. They cannot assess the fluid status in the clinic because of the obesity or multiple other things, or they have underlying COPD and heart failure. And it's really hard to know if it is heart failure or COPD, or we have the patient that you give diuretics and the renal function goes up because you overdiurese. And that's where the pulmonary sensors are really worth, because you can do a right heart catheterization from the house on these patients. And obviously this is not for, it's not a technology for everybody. And that's where we can come and help to see who are the people that will benefit from this therapy. Who are those patients that are compliant? What is the phenotype of the heart failure that people would benefit from it? So that is the work that we do along other specialties or subspecialties within cardiology, like cardiothoracic surgery, valvular heart failure, or the structural team.
That is both fascinating and very important, because the way I, of course, as you know, I'm an infectious disease doctor, so I'm almost completely ignorant on heart failure, but I do remember what CHF means, at least. But you know, to me, CHF has always been kind of the equivalent to sepsis. You get CHF from, you know, uncontrolled hypertension, you know, coronary disease or ischemic disease, valvular disease of different kinds, you know, afterload, preload issues, etc. So it's like, it kind of be the manifestation of so many things. So I think it's great, not only that you are all available especially for that, but also you can be the port of entry for other reasons, because I do know that there's people within cardiology with a focus on, you know, hyperlipidemia, hypertension, valvular disease, etc. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, with a decrease in the EF is quite a common occurrence as an endpoint to all of this. Any other aspect that you were interested in mentioning looking into the presentation?
I think the last thing, as I said, my talk will be in generalities, the phenotype, what is reduced ejection fraction, what is preserved ejection fraction, the management of congestion, how to refer, what is advanced heart failure, and all those things. But something that I want to mention is that here at CentraCare, we just started a cardio-oncology clinic, and it's a joint force between the cardiology department and the cancer center, the Coburn's Cancer Center. When I did my advanced heart failure fellowship, I did it at Houston Methodist, and I was in very, very close connection with the MD Anderson, mm-hmm. that is a very, very big cancer center, and I did a cardio-oncology clinic there. There's this growing understanding that all this cancer therapy has affection to the heart, mm-hmm. and we just started a cardio-oncology clinic in the Coverts Cancer Center that I do staff, and I go there, and we do it twice a month. Right now, we're starting with breast cancer, and the reason for that is because there is a lot of medications or chemotherapy that affect the heart in the long term, and not only chemotherapy, but radiation therapy, some of the new agents, like the immunotherapy, and the checkpoint inhibitors, that is the future of cancer therapy. It's highly cardiotoxic, and there has been reported checkpoint inhibitor myocarditis, and I actually have an example of a patient that ended up on ECMO that had a melanoma with checkpoint inhibitor myocarditis that we referred to the university. So just want to make people aware that chemotherapy has some effects on the heart. We did start the cardio-oncology clinic. If anybody has any concern or any patient that can have concern for cardiotoxicity or heart failure related with cancer therapy, that we do have that clinic available where we can monitor, manage, and prevent toxicity from chemotherapy, because those two, cardiovascular disease and cancer therapy, are the number one and number two killers of Americans today.
That's very important too. Yeah, that's a great topic too. Dr. Miranda, thank you very much for joining us. We were and continue to be, and more so now after talking to you, are looking forward to your presentation in March for updates in CHF and all the topics in relation to that. So looking forward to seeing you all in March.
Well, thanks for the invite, and looking forward to it as well.
Join Dr. Mintzes and Miranda for the next Science of Practicing Medicine CME on either Wednesday, March 8th at 7 a.m. or Thursday, March 16th at 12:15 p.m. on Teams.